First off, thank you all for being here. We appreciate you taking the time to come out and care about your community and learn about what's being proposed. We thank Supervisor Marino and Supervisor-elect Niles for hosting us tonight. And to start off, I just want to introduce myself and the APA staff that's here to conduct the hearing. My name is Keith McKeever. I'm the Director of Public Information for the Adirondack Park Agency, and tonight I'm going to serve as the hearing officer. We have our Director of Planning, Megan Phillips. We have Matt Kendall from our staff. We have Nicole Persona from our staff. And then we also have Emily back there in the back corner for us. Okay, so we're here tonight to help and assist. And this hearing, we're going to have a little formal, a little bit to start here, and then we'll I'm going to explain the components of the hearing and how we're going to proceed tonight. So bear with me here. This hearing is conducted under Section 805-2C of the Adirondack Park Agency Act and the New York State Environmental Quality Review Act. It is intended to explain a map amendment application now before the agency to public officials, park residents, and other interested parties. The map amendment was initiated by a landowner for certain lands in the town of Lake Luzerne in the great county of Warren. This hearing is legislative in nature and is no way adversarial or quasi-judicial. My job is to explain how the hearing works and to ensure that it is an orderly proceeding. I will not be making any findings or conclusions of fact tonight at this hearing. We're here to explain and to hear from you. This proceeding will be recorded. A summary of public comments received here or submitted in writing, along with agency responses to those comments, will be prepared and presented to the agency board members prior to a decision on this matter at a meeting to be scheduled in the future. A draft supplemental environmental impact statement has been prepared and is available on our website, which is www.apa.ny.gov. And there's some copies floating around through the crowd tonight, and they'll be available afterwards. For today's hearing, the agency is going to make a presentation explaining the Adirondack Park Land Use and Development Plan map and amendment process, and provide a summary of the draft supplemental environmental impact statement, including the relevant considerations that we have to review to make map amendments. Afterwards, the public, local officials, and any member of the public wishing to make a statement for the record will be able to do so. As a matter of process, because the proceeding is being recorded tonight, we want to get everyone's name correct, so when you do come up to make a comment, we ask that you please identify yourself. The comment period is currently open through November 17th to allow time for additional written statements, and we definitely encourage any highly detailed comments to be submitted in writing. You may submit a written comment letter whether or not you speak here tonight, and the comments may be submitted directly to our website or by email, which we'll have that up on the screen, but it's mapamendment_comments@apa.ny.gov. But we'll put that email and the address on the screen for you at the end. Okay. Notice of this hearing was given by publication in the Post Star, the Environmental Notice Bulletin, and by written notice to members of different parties, including local and regional officials and potentially affected and adjacent landowners. Please note that the law's criteria for granting a map amendment primarily involve a close look at the existing characteristics of the proposed amendment area. The agency by law cannot consider any specific proposed development project when we're reviewing a map amendment application. Rather, the agency must examine existing conditions and resources of the proposed map amendment area and analyze the potential environmental impacts to the maximum development that could be realized if the proposed area was reclassified. Please bear this in mind when offering comments tonight. When we get to the public comment speaker opportunity, we have about a dozen people signed up, so we'll ask you to try and be concise, try and keep to 3 minutes, and we encourage you to augment your comments tonight by written comment. Both carry the same amount of weight. Are there any questions regarding the process tonight of how the hearing will run? Yes, sir.
Are people tuned in on Zoom?
We are not on Zoom, no, sir. Any other questions?
That's unfortunate because it's only 4 o'clock and this isn't the work day.
Duly noted, ma'am.
Consider that.
Thank you.
Is there any ability to record them?
It is being recorded right now, so we will have audio recording of the entire meeting. And the Matt's presentation to the board is with his same information is also on our website. You can review that too as well. But understand your comment, yes. Any other comments? Okay, with that, I'm going to turn it over to Matt Kendall, and he's going to give his presentation.
Thanks for coming, everyone. Again, my name is Matt Kendall. I've been with the Park Agency for 18 years now. And like he mentioned, I did a similar presentation to our board in October, and that presentation is posted on our website, so people can review that, and then you can also submit comments directly from our website. I just wanted to point out that when you do submit comments, some people are getting an error message lately when they're submitting comments on this. We are getting the comment if you get the error message, but if you have any questions, just feel free to give us a call to see if it got through. But in all cases that we're aware of people getting those error messages, we did get the comment. They got a bounce back an error message after it got submitted. So the Adirondack Park Agency is reviewing amendments to the Adirondack Park Land Use and Development Plan map. It's also referred to as a plan map. This review was initiated by the application of a landowner, and this is map amendment 2025-01. Staff prepared a draft supplemental environmental impact statement that reviews this request. First, I'm going to explain what was actually requested. Then I'm going to provide some background information on the plan map, how we review a request when it's initiated by the landowner, and the criteria that the agency uses when reviewing a map amendment request. Then I'll go into more details about the areas that are actually under consideration. The Draft Supplemental Environmental Impact Statement, or DSEIS, is available on our website, and so we're going to present the information on there tonight, and you may submit comments on that document itself either today or you may submit them in writing. This map here just shows the general location of the area that's being requested. Again, it's in the town of Lake Luzerne and in Warren County. You can see the hamlet of Lake Luzerne where we are down in the bottom of the map. You can see Lake George, and that red line through there is Route 9N, and that purple area is the area that's under review right now. You can also see the park boundary on here, that blue line. You can go to the next. So here's a map showing that the areas that were requested. This map legend here shows the requested areas by the applicant. It shows area 1 and area 2. Area 1 is 11.8 acres in size, and area 2 is 56.5 acres in size. Area 1 is 11.8, and area 2 is 56.5. So the request was to change area 1 from rural use to moderate intensity use, and you can see on the legend here, it's currently in the area that's classified, that's colored yellow, that's our rural use area. The request is for area 1 to be reclassified from rural use to moderate intensity use, and area 2 to be reclassified from rural use to low intensity use. These two areas are a portion of a larger lot that's approximately 93.3 acres in size, and I'm going to come back to this.
You could use this mic. Turn it on.
It's on.
Oh, it's on.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that.
All right.
I'm going to stay away from that one. Okay.
Start over.
So I'm going to explain we have a draft supplemental environmental impact statement. I'm going to explain that. I'm going to go over some of the information of what was requested, some of the background of what the plan map is and how we review requests, and then I'll go into more details of the areas under consideration, but the draft supplemental environmental impact statement is available on our website. Okay, so this map is showing the areas that are requested, area 1 and area 2. Area 1 is 11.8 acres in size, and area 2 is 56.5 acres in size. These are two portions of a larger 93.3 acre lot. The request was for area 1 to be reclassified from rural use to moderate intensity use, and area 2 to be reclassified from rural use to low intensity use. And I'm going to go more into this later, but I'm going to go through the map amendment process and criteria first. Next slide, Megan. So this is the
Adirondack Park Land Use and Development Plan map, and this, we're reviewing an amendment to the We're reviewing an amendment to the Adirondack Park Land Use and Development Plan map. Section 805 of the Adirondack Park Agency Act describes the Adirondack Park Land Use and Development Plan, which is a land use plan for the private lands in the park. It describes the purpose, policies, and objectives and compatible uses of six private land use categories. Those are hamlet, moderate intensity use, low intensity use, rural use, resource management, and industrial use. If you're familiar with the Adirondack Park Agency and our land classification maps, you're probably used to seeing this with the other classifications, the state lands, like the classifications like wilderness and wild forest. That's a separate part of our law. It's a state land master plan. There's a different process for different classifications, different process for amending those. So we're just looking at the private lands in the park for this, for the Adirondack Park Land Use and Development Plan map. The Adirondack Park Land Use and Development Plan consists of six classifications, and probably the most consequential impact of a classification is potential development intensity. Each classification has specific overall intensity guidelines, and this slide shows the overall intensity guidelines, and that's written here in terms of minimum average lot size per acre. So a principal building, there's no overall intensity guidelines for hamlet and industrial use areas, but for moderate intensity use areas, you would need 1.3 acres per principal building, and a principal building is a single family home or its equivalent under the Agency Act. There's a few different types of buildings that could be, but that's basically a principal building is equivalent to a single family home. So in low intensity use, you would need 3.2 acres per principal building, rural use, and 8.5 acres per principal building. With an agency permit, lots can be smaller. So this is the average lot size. With an agency permit, you can create smaller lots as long as the overall average lot size meets these minimums. So you can create smaller lots as long as the overall, you have average a lot size that meets these overall intensity guidelines. The land use classifications have other impacts. Each have a compatible use list, specific shoreline setbacks, distances. And the classification also determines whether specific projects are reviewed by the Adirondack Park Agency. So the closer you are to hamlet, the less likely a project might need to be reviewed by the agency. But those classifications also determine that. Next slide. So the three classifications that are relevant to our review are these three right here, moderate intensity use and low intensity use, because that's the request to be reclassified as that. In rural use, which is the current classification. The classifications are based on the character of the land itself. So these classifications represent a spectrum of land use limitations and a spectrum of development patterns. Generally, the higher density and less restrictive classifications are near growth centers, places with public facilities, utilities, community services, and places with soils and slopes that are suitable for intense development. On the other side, the more restrictive classifications, the lowest density areas are typically the remote areas, less accessible places, and places with open space uses like agriculture and forest management, and also undeveloped areas along travel corridors, areas with steep slopes and large amounts of wetlands or poor soils for development also are in those more restrictive classifications. So this classification system encourages development closer to the hamlets and helps protect the open space of the park. Section 805 of the Adirondack Park Agency Act provides a process for local governments or landowners to request changes to the plan map. The standards for the agency's decisions for map amendments are primarily found in three places, and that's Section 805 of the APA Act, Part 583 of the agency's rules and regulations, and we have a final generic environmental impact statement. So the draft supplemental that we're reviewing right now is supplemental to the generic. There's a generic environmental impact statement that's also posted on our agency's website. And I'm gonna go into more on this in a few minutes. But you can watch the agency's board presentation in November or October on our website, which has some more information about these our criteria. So Section 805 of the Agency Act says that the agency must find that the reclassification would be consistent with the land use and development plan. So the agency must Specifically, the agency must find that the area reflects the character descriptions, purposes, policies, and objectives of the land use areas to which a classification is proposed. So in this case, moderate intensity use and low intensity use. The character descriptions, purposes, policies, and objectives are found in Section 805.3 of the Act, and they're also listed in the appendix of the draft supplemental EIS. Next slide. So the area under consideration is currently rural use. The character descriptions for rural use areas are areas where natural resource limitations, public considerations necessitate fairly stringent development constraints. These areas usually have fairly shallow soils, steep slopes, critical wildlife habitats, or proximity to scenic vistas or key public lands. Frequently, they're remote from existing hamlet areas or not readily accessible. And these areas and the resource management areas provide essential open space atmosphere that characterizes the park. And again, those are all listed in Section 805 of the Act, and that's, I'm just kind of paraphrasing it here. Section 805 also lists the purpose, policies, and objectives for each classification. And so for rural use areas, the purpose, policies, and objectives is to provide for and encourage those rural land use areas that are compatible with the natural resources. It also is intended to preserve the open spaces that are essential and basic to the unique character of the Adirondack Park and prevent strip development along major travel corridors to enhance the aesthetic and economic benefit derived from a park atmosphere along these corridors. The request for one of these areas is to be reclassified as moderate intensity use. The character descriptions for moderate intensity use, they talk about the areas where the natural resource and anticipated for need for future development indicate that a relatively intense development, primarily residential in character, is possible, desirable, and suitable. These areas are near or adjacent to hamlets to provide for residential expansion. They're also located along highways and accessible shorelines where the existing development has established the character of the area. In those areas identified as moderate intensity use, where relatively intense development does not already exist, are generally characterized by deep soils on moderate slopes and readily accessible to existing hamlet areas. So we also have the purpose, policies, and objectives of moderate intensity use. That's to provide for development opportunities in areas where the development will not harm, significantly harm the relatively tolerant physical and biological resources, to provide for residential expansion and growth, and to accommodate uses related to the residential uses in the vicinity of hamlets where community services can be most readily and economically be provided. Sorry, this is kind of like the boring part, but this is what we have to evaluate the area too. And then the last one is low intensity use. The other area too is being request was to be reclassified as low intensity use. The character description for these talk about it being readily accessible, normally within reasonable proximity to a hamlet. It's where the physical and biological resources are fairly tolerant and can withstand development at an intensity somewhat lower than those found in moderate intensity use in hamlet areas. And also it says that these areas often exhibit a wide variability in their land capability to support development. And these areas are generally areas with fairly deep soils, moderate slopes, no large acreages of critical or biological importance. And the purpose, policies, and objectives is to provide for development opportunities at levels that will protect the physical and biological resources while still providing orderly growth and development in the park. And that these areas will primarily be used for providing housing development and opportunities, not only for park residents, but also for the seasonal home market. So that was the first, the character descriptions, purposes, policies, and objectives. Again, those are in our appendix of the EIS, also Section 805 of the Act, if you want to read all of them. Section 805 also says that we take into account natural resource, open space, public, and economic and other land use factors. And next slide. Yep, and then finally, the agency's determination shall be consistent with and reflect the regional nature of the land use and development plan and the regional scale and approach used in its preparation. Being regional scale and approach is an important concept. Boundaries cannot include private parcel boundaries, contour lines, vegetation lines, or watershed lines. If we change the map, we have to look at a broader area. And I'll go more into this in a moment because the requested area did not meet the requirement as private parcel boundaries, private parcel requests typically don't, because they don't reflect the regional nature used in the preparation of the map. Next slide. Again, so the next set of our criteria for our decision comes from our rules and regulations, Part 583. It says the agency will not consider any private development proposals or local land use controls. So we don't ask applicants what they're planning to do with the property. We don't. That's not part of our decision. We're looking at the resources on the ground. It also says we refer to land use classification determinants. So these there help us. These help guide us to use look at the resources. So it tells us to look at land use area classification determinants. Again, those are also in the appendix of the EIS, and those are appendix Q8 of our rules and regulations. Next slide. Land use area classification determinants. These are basic characteristics of the land and the implication for land use. They help identify areas that are best suited for development. And they fall into three categories: natural resource, existing land use patterns, and public considerations. Natural resource determinants help identify areas that are physically most capable of sustaining development without significant adverse impacts. So these are like soils, so deep well drained soils, deep soils to bedrock, deep soils to water table. Those can support higher intensity development than shallow soils. They can support septic systems. We also look at topography. Steep slopes should not be developed on. They can cause erosions. Septic systems cannot be installed. More vegetation may need to be cleared on developing steep slopes. We also look at water, such as river streams, floodplains, and wetlands. Vegetation, like rare plants and animals, or rare plants. And we also look at wildlife, rare and endangered species, and key wildlife habitats. The determinations also include public considerations. These are the land use area determinants that create the park character. So these include scenic vistas, travel corridors, specifically undeveloped areas adjacent to and with site of public highways, and proximity to state lands. So these recognize that areas need to be protected in order to preserve the open space character of the park. And then also the agency land use area determinants look at proximity to community services. Public facilities such as sewer and water, and existing land uses. We look at the historic patterns of growth, obviously, with what's happening there. The draft supplemental environmental impact statement has lots of information about it, about the two areas and all the different land use land use area determinants, but I'm going to go over some of these in detail right now. Finally, the agency, as I mentioned, has a final generic environmental impact statement. This is posted on the agency's website. The title for the final generic environmental impact statement is "The Process for Amending the Adirondack Park Land Use and Development Plan Map." And as you can guess, it lays out the process that we use to amend the Adirondack Park and Land Use and Development Plan Map. So it lays out the guidelines of the actual process that the agency follows when we get applications. The generic environmental impact statement contains some helpful information of how we meet the requirements of 805. So like when section 805 says that the agency's determination shall be consistent with and reflect the regional nature of the land use and development plan and the regional scale and approach used in its preparation. And it explains that. It explains how the map was originally prepared, and that was basically essentially looking at these same land use area determinants, like soils, topography, existing development, travel corridors, and they compiled them into a resource compilation map of the different resource limitations, and then broke them up into bigger regions that classified broad areas that represented the capability to support development within those broader areas. The generic EIS also explains what it means for map amendments to be regional scale and approach, and explains how we handle requests that are not regional in scale, which is the case here. Next slide. So we the map doesn't use private parcel boundaries for land use area boundaries. It can't use contour boundaries, I mentioned. It can't use vegetation lines. It can't use watershed boundaries. Can't use soil boundaries. The boundaries on the plan map used to identify and separate land classifications were what they called regionally identifiable lines, or regional boundaries. And the generic EIS provides a list of what these boundaries were, and these are roads, streams, rivers, political boundaries, great lot tracks, great lot line boundaries or track boundaries, or standard setbacks of a 10th mile, 8th mile, or quarter mile from these. And an important concept in defining the boundaries of each land use area on the map was that the boundaries don't represent a precise change in land-based resource characteristics. Instead, they separate larger areas with different overall characteristics. Therefore, each land use area on the map reflects an assessment of the general character of the lands within its boundaries. The generic EIS also explains that when we receive a request for an amendment, that it's sometimes necessary to expand the area by including nearby lands similar in character, so that the area is regional in scale, that we meet that regional scale requirement. And this is typical when we get a map amendment that is initiated by a landowner, because a landowner can only request the land that they own, and since we don't use private parcel boundaries, we need to reflect the regional scale and approach, and so we typically have to expand the areas under review, and this was done for the request that initiated this review. Actually, can you go back to the previous map? So the applicant used private parcel boundaries, and they also used soil mapping boundaries from the County Soil Survey to delineate the areas that were requested. The area of the applicant's parcel that was not included in the request were the areas with soils that pose more significant development limitations. The applicant named the requested areas Area 1 and Area 2, and so when we say Area 1 and Area 2, we're specifically referring to what was requested. Appendix A of the draft supplemental EIS contains the application materials that were submitted with the request, which includes the applicant's justification for why they believe these areas should be reclassified as requested. Area 1 and Area 2 are not regional in scale, so we did expand this for the review like the generic EIS tells us to. And as I explained earlier, since Area 1 and Area 2 are not regional scale, we have to expand this area so that it is regional scale and approach as original map. The larger expanded areas are referred to Areas A and Area B in the EIS, and the draft supplemental EIS examines Areas A and Area B because these larger areas are the areas that meet the regional scale requirement, and so they can be potentially reclassified. So we can look at these areas and compare them to those other requirements that we have, the purpose, policies, and objectives, and those kind of things that we can look at since it meets the regional scale requirements. Next slide.
Ask a question about that? So, okay, I think you're gonna explain.
Okay.
So it's not just, you're gonna have to reclassify a whole bigger amount of area than what they're requesting.
Correct. I'm going to go into that right now. So this map shows how we expanded these areas. So the requested areas are the two areas in gray. And again, they use private parcel boundaries and they used soil boundaries to delineate these areas. But the agency cannot consider changing these areas only because they're not regional in scale. So we had to choose boundaries from our list of acceptable boundaries. In this case, we used roads, great lot lines, setbacks from the roads. And if you recall, the purpose, policies, and objectives for the requested areas, moderate intensity use and low intensity use, talked about these areas being readily accessible. And these gray areas, as you can see, only have a little bit of road frontage on them. So the agency expanded these areas by using these roads, great lot lines, and setbacks to make the review area regional in scale and approach, so we can actually compare them to the other requirements.
I have a question. You answered another question. So what makes that regional is it's all one piece? There's no breaks in it? Is that what makes it regional to you?
I think we're just going to move forward on this.
Can we just keep, in the interest of time,
you answered the question.
I understand, but in the interest of time, I want to keep moving.
So, next map. So this map shows areas A and area B, and these we felt these areas do meet the regional scale and boundaries because they're defined by a regional boundary, and they can now be evaluated whether they meet the other criteria from the map amendments. So area A here now is 73.9 acres in size, and area B is 123 acres in size, and we're going to go to the next map here. This is basically the same map zoomed out. This map shows the two proposed areas at a smaller scale, and this kind of demonstrates that regional scale and how these broader land use areas look at this scale. So as you can see in the bottom left corner, the brown blotch, that's the hamlet of Lake Luzerne, that's where we are now. And then between here and this map amendment area, there's one contiguous, one moderate intensity use area. The area is part of a larger rural use area, and then as you can see, as you get closer to Lake George, is another hamlet, brown land use area, and a moderate intensity use area down there. So this kind of demonstrates that regional scale and approach. We're not looking at little pieces of people's property. We're looking at we classify lands on a much larger scale. The agency does not classify individual parcels or portions of parcels, or just the developable portions of parcels of an individual parcels. We have to look at it in a regional context. And this map here shows the two hamlet areas, and you can see the highway Route 9N, and then you can see the park boundary. So the obviously it's not classified outside the park. Next slide. So as I mentioned earlier, we look at land use area classification determinants. I'm going to go through some information on these classification determinants. The draft supplemental EIS has information related to relevant land use classification determinants. And these are primarily in the environmental setting section of the environmental impact statement, but I'm going to go over some of these now. Next slide. This is a map of the roads that access the two proposed map amendment areas. These areas have road frontage on three public roads. Next slide. There's approximately 3,700 feet of road frontage on New York State Route 9N. This section of highway is classified, it's a New York State Scenic Byway. It's the Dude Ranch Trail Scenic Byway. New York State DOT estimated an average annual traffic, daily traffic on this road to be 3,417 vehicles. Because this is a state highway and the map amendment area is currently classified as rural use, there's a highway critical environmental area that exists along this area. This highway CEA exists, it's 150 foot setback from the road right away, and it exists because of its classification. New land use and development within a CEA is more likely to need agency review. If this area is reclassified, there would be no highway CEA here because they don't exist in moderate intensity use or low intensity use areas. This photo is taken from the western edge looking east. We're right at the intersection of Hall Hill Road and Route 9N. Next slide. Hidden Valley Road is on the east side of the area. It's a paved town road. This is a picture of the general, kind of gives you the general character of that area. Next slide. And Hall Hill Road is on the west side, and it's also a paved town road. And there's a picture, give you the general character of that area. Next slide. Existing land uses is another classification determinant. This map shows the current uses according to the tax parcel data. There's a full table of the parcels and their current usage according to the assessor and in the EIS. But this map just shows the general categories of land classifications. It also shows the approximate building footprints within the area. It shows the classification. It's a little hard to see on here. There's no agricultural parcels in there. That green you're seeing are vacant parcels. There's some, the blue, there's a light blue that's commercial. There's a dark blue that's recreation and entertainment.
Green is residential vacant, right?
Correct. But these are the general, these are the bigger, more general categories. The assessor uses, it's classified as vacant according to that category. There's no sewer or water available, public sewer or water available to the map amendment areas. And next slide. Without sewer, new land use and development would need on-site wastewater treatment. So the type of soil is important, and this map shows the soils according to the county soil survey. This map is produced by USDA's Natural Resource Conservation Service. It shows the primary soil types that can be expected to be found in a given area. The draft supplemental environmental impact statement has a table of the soils in these areas and the relative suitability for on-site wastewater for each area. Approximately 57% of area A and 88% of area B appear to have soils that are deep, well-drained, and likely suitable for septic systems. Next slide. This map shows slope. Another natural resource-related determinant is slopes. Appendix Q8 says slopes above 15% present a substantial hazard for erosion, wastewater treatment. Septic systems cannot be placed on slopes above 15%, and even above 8% slopes, they have more limitations of the types of system that can be installed. Slopes above 15 on this map are the orange areas, red areas, and the slopes that fall in that 8 to 15 category are the yellow areas. Next slide. This map also shows topography, but it shows it with elevation contours, and also shows water resources. So we has the two areas under consideration. It also shows our wetlands. There's about 13 acres of wetlands within these areas. These were mapped using aerial imagery interpretation by agency staff. This also shows water body classifications and classified according to DC's water quality standards. There is a stream in the very northern end of that. It's classified, it's a pink line. It's a classified C, it's T by DEC, which means best use is for fishing, and it's a trout water body. And then this stream flows into Lake Venere, just downstream of the area. Next slide. That's a picture of the stream from Hidden Valley Road and a picture of Lake Venere from Hidden Valley Road. Next slide. There's also a mapped aquifer in this area, and this shows that this aquifer is mapped at a very small scale, so it's the details aren't that great, but it seems to be near it. Next slide. This shows the 2024 National Land Cover Database. This is a data set that's produced by the USGS. It's classifies land at a 30 meter by 30 meter grid. You can see the primary types of land use within those 30 meter by 30 meter grids. As you can see, it's predominantly forested. It also recognizes the wetlands that were on the previous map. It also shows the developed areas. So you can see there's some development along the highways, especially at the intersection of Route 9N and Hidden Valley Road. Approximately 85% of Area A, 93% of Area B contain land cover categories that indicate that the land is undeveloped according to this data set. Next slide. There's no known species of concern or habitats of species of concern identified here, but we do have a data set that was created by a Wildlife Conservation Society that shows large contiguous forests. This is part of an approximately 12,000 acre contiguous area of forest. Large forest blocks provide habitats for area-sensitive species and are more resilient to large-scale forest disturbance, which maintains forest health over time. And this area, according to this data set, is identified as a regionally important forest block due to its size, falling in the category of 6,000 to 15,000 acres. Next slide. So we did write an environmental impact statement, so we have to look at environmental impacts. Map changes itself. Map amendments themselves do not have environmental impacts. However, the change that could result in projects could have environmental impacts. And this table shows the potential build-out under the current and proposed classifications. And so without knowing what's going to happen here in the future, we have to compare the impacts of potential land uses and development in the existing classifications with impacts of the most intensive land use and development allowed under the proposed classifications. And this table shows approximate build-out under those different classification scenarios. At first we have Area A is approximately 73.9 acres. The overall intensity guidelines for reuse is 8.5 acres. And so within that area, there's approximately 9 principal buildings. And again, a principal building's a single family home or its equivalent under the Agency Act, and the equivalent is 11,000 square feet of commercial space or 10 hotel rooms, and so that just breaks that up into that. Under the proposed classification, which would be moderate intensity use, the overall intensity guidelines is one principal building per 1.3 acres. The number of principal buildings that would be allowed in Area A under the proposed classification is 57. So Area B is 123 acres. That's rural use. It's 8.5 under rural use, 8.5 acres per principal building. The number of PBs is approximately 14, and under the proposed classification of low intensity use, 3.2 acres per principal building. That would be 38. So that's a net gain of 72 principal buildings in this area. Next slide. And again, so we look at reclassification to new land uses alone does not create environmental impacts. However, the higher intensity development that could result may create impacts, which are summarized non-exhaustively here. For full analysis, you can please read the environment, the draft supplemental environmental impact statement, but I'm going to go over these just real quick. So the potential impacts identified for this proposal would be impacts to physical resources, including runoff and sedimentation to surface and groundwater, impacts to biological resources, such as habitat degradation, introduction of invasive species, and the disruption of two patterns of wildlife movement, impacts to community character and to community and area character, including demand for services such as schools, police, and fire departments, impacts to transportation, including new parking areas, change in traffic patterns, and increased vehicle miles traveled, impacts to scenic resources, including increased development in a view shed of a scenic byway, impacts to adjacent properties, including increased ambient light, sky glow, and odor related to traffic and heating sources, and impacts to climate change, including loss of forested areas, land conversion, and other the co-benefits provided by forest landscapes. Next slide. Environmental impact statements are supposed to consider alternatives. When it comes to map amendment alternatives, we only have a short list of potential alternatives. We're not reviewing a project. So the three categories of alternatives are no action. One alternative could be denial. The agency could determine that the current classification of rural use is appropriate for the proposed map amount areas, and the current classification would remain. We can also look at alternative classifications. Area A is currently classified as rural use, and the request was seeking for it to be classified as moderate intensity use, and therefore low intensity use is an alternative intermediate classification that could be considered. There are no no low-intensity uses areas contiguous to area, but it would be could be possibly considered as an alternative. We could also look at alternative regional boundaries. The area was requested could not be approved as requested because it was not delineated by regional boundaries, and it was delineated by private parcel boundaries, soil map boundaries. From the soil survey, which do not meet agency's criteria for regional boundaries, but the agency expanded the requested area. Alternative boundaries could be used to exclude some areas that were that posed physical limitations or other concerns. One area of concern that was brought up in the EIS was potential impacts of the proposed map amendment to the park character along the scenic resources along the public highway, especially New York State Route 9N. That section of the highway is a that forms the southern boundary of the Area A and Area B is part of the Dude Ranch Trail Scenic Byway. A potential alternative that could be considered is to consider a line 1/10 mile setback from the center line of the road instead of the road itself. And while this may avoid potential impacts of the scenic quality along these roads, the result may not be consistent with Section 805 of the Agency Act because of the objectives of the requested classification. So moderate intensity use and low intensity use areas are to encourage residential and other land use areas that are readily accessible to existing growth centers. Increasing the allowable development in areas that are more difficult to access can increase the cost of development, cost of services provided by local governments, and can increase the adverse environmental impacts from development.
Can you please just explain that one again? That's all I'm asking. I don't get why the setback.
If we want to talk after this, I can talk after you. We can move forward here. So this is the map amendment review process. The draft supplemental environmental impact statement was filed, and it's available on the agency's website. We are in the midst of a public comment period, and the comment period will remain open through November 17th. This is the only public hearing we're holding. After the comment period has concluded, the agency will prepare a final supplemental environmental impact statement. This will include a summary of the comments received, along with the agency's response to the comments received. After the final supplemental environmental impact statement is filed, the agency can issue its findings and a decision on the proposed map amendments. Next slide. Again, we'll accept comments until November 17th, and here's where the comments can be sent, and you may also provide comments today at this hearing. And with that, I think we can open up the
hearing process. Thank you. And we will stick around to answer questions if anyone wants. And again, the comment period is open until the 17th, so you may provide any comments. Okay, thank you, everybody. I'm going to now open up the public comment portion of tonight's hearing. I'm going to call people, two people at a time, so one person came forward and the other person can be on deck. We have 12 people signed up. We will be continuing to accept written public comment and encourage you to augment your comments tonight with written public comment until November 17th to the address on. So tonight for your public comments, please be concise and think of others. And then we will try and keep you to 3 minutes, please. Our first public first speaker who signed up is Jennifer Lancer, and she'll be followed by Sandra Sawyer. It's the second one is Sandra Sawyer. Does she want to speak? Okay, and she'll be followed by Ron Arnold. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Lancer. I'm the executive director of a not-for-profit organization called Songcatchers, and we're located in Lower Westchester. What we do is we provide music lessons for children and the community. And I am here because I own a property that's directly across from the property in question, and I vehemently oppose it along with many of my neighbors that I'm representing here. And I bring up my work because for the past 48 years our organization has brought children up here to enjoy the fresh air, the trees, the mountains, and everything that this area has to give to these families. So also when I was 16, I came up here to Lake George, and 40 years later, I took my children here, and it was pretty much unchanged. And that's because of all of the laws that are in place, the agencies who are here to protect the environment. And unfortunately, with things like this and precedents like this and changes in the maps, it won't be protected too much longer. So we just want to make sure that this doesn't go on. Since I purchased this property 5 years ago, I've been dealing with many of these hearings, and it's been going on. I don't understand why we just can't say no. Why can't we just say no to this person who knew coming into the property that it was not zoned for any type of development, subdivision, or anything else like that? So I... I just feel that it really should be taken into consideration that these changes shouldn't take place. I also want to add that in my house, my neighbor had a terrible fire that his house was burned to the ground, and the house next to him also had to be knocked down as a result. 40 trees were knocked down over this past 2 years, and I have directly been impacted by this change. There's a climate change that has been increased. The water is warmer in Lake Vinar, where we live, and it's just changed the whole air quality. So I just want to say that something like this would completely change the environment, that you have to take this into consideration when you're changing the map. It's not just low intensity and rural and this and that. It's more than that. It's changes to the environment and everything else. With that, I'll say, please, we need to set a precedent that people who purchase in the future cannot think that they're going to change the laws. Okay?
Our next speaker is Mr. Ronald Arnold, please. Will you state your name first?
My name's Ron Arnold. I live at 55 Hall Hill Road, which is across the road from where this is proposed. I chose to build my house where I did, so this exact thing could not happen. I want to be able to sit on my porch, enjoy the forest, the wildlife, and the peace and quiet. People want to live in a city, they should move to the city. I'd like to compliment the APA on their comprehensive environmental impact statement. It hit every point I was going to address at the meeting tonight. So I'm going to not read the 39 pages. If anybody hasn't read that impact statement, you should, especially the people that live around the lake, because it's really going to affect you. I'd like to refer to the population trend for the town of Lake Luzerne. States there's an 8% decrease in the population from 2010 to 2020. It's probably more than that now. There's plenty of houses around town for sale. There's plenty of property that's already zoned to build houses on in town. So this is not needed to switch this around. There's no need to destroy the natural beauty of that area, other than to line Mr. Reed's pockets. There's no benefit to the community by loading that area up with housing. I believe Mr. Reed already has approval to put 9 houses on his property. No? I thought it was zoned for 9 houses.
It's zoned for 55 houses, actually. Okay. So you know what the word means.
All right, yeah, I know what it means.
Okay, can we please be civil?
Okay, so this area has a potential of 72 new buildings on top of what's already existing there. You can visualize what that would look like, and it just doesn't fit with this area. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Our next speaker is Michael Goodhart, please. And Michael is followed by Vicky. I'm not sure. You guys. There you go, sir.
Thank you. I'm Michael Goodhart. I live at the opposite end of town. I don't always believe everything the APA says, but I think in this case, the APA did do their due diligence, did classify the property the way it is, and I think it should stay the way it is. And if some landlord wants to modify the area, I think they should do that before they purchase the property and not kind of come in the back door and try to get things their way. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, sir. Vicky?
Hi, my name is Vicky Legault. I live on Howe Road, and I reluctantly got elected to speak for a lot of the residents on our road. We're about a mile from the from the proposed area, and a lot of us walk there. A lot of us have moved to this area, and this is all stuff that Mr. Arnold and the first person that came up has said, that the reason many of us live here is because of the way it is, and we really don't want to see a change. And the APA, in their mission, is to preserve and protect, and I really hope they do in this case. And that's, thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Next is Nancy Belanga.
Belange.
Belange. Sorry, Nancy.
That's okay. I'm Nancy Belanger, as we just found out. And I live probably like a mile from where the proposed properties are. I walk there every day. And I have to say that I do not support the amendment for most of the reasons what everybody else is saying, because it already is able to be developed, right, under 805. So why do we need to increase it threefold? Because we're not going to use it? Because we're going to use it. We're going to try to maximize what we can. So I was going to say no to that.
Thank you, ma'am.
Yep.
Our next speaker is Howard Shatner.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Well, thank you to the Adirondack Park Agency and its leadership for providing the opportunity to weigh in, to allow residents of Lake Luzerne to weigh in on this proposal. My name is Howard Schaefer. I'm a 5-generation resident. a former president of the Lake Luzerne Association and have served on the Lake Luzerne Town Planning Board. And like everyone in this room and those who should be tuning in by Zoom, we care greatly about land use issues in Lake Luzerne. Just 3 short years ago, and please keep this in mind, there were multiple residents volunteering their time and energy along with engineers, soil scientists, and land use professionals who took hundreds of hours to put together the town comprehensive plan, the updated town comprehensive plan. It's our roadmap for land use planning for the future, and it was created for just that purpose. The tentatively proposed 197-acre rezoning clearly is a textbook definition of spot zoning, which in itself is problematic. If this is going to be reclassified, then why do a comprehensive plan?
Thank you, sir. Our next speaker is Amy Johnson. I'll come. You want to do it from there?
Yeah, there you go.
I'm just going to read this.
I'm Amy Johnson. I live at 146 Hall Hill Road, probably about a mile up from where this is going to impact our road. I'd like the APA to deny the request to rezone 197 acres of land. A quick Google search, you've already spoken about this, would allow for up to 95 buildings or 950 hotel rooms on that 197 acres. Currently, it's designated for 23 buildings or 230 hotel rooms. If the argument is that rezoning this property will bring in families to populate our school district, I don't believe this development is the solution. The average age of a first-time homeowner in New York State is 37 years old, and the average age that a New York family starts having kids is around 29. The average cost for a first-time homeowner in 2024 was a house $335,230, with the average annual income required to own this home being $80,291. I don't know how many of you know a 29-year-old in Lake Luzerne who's making $80,000 a year. Great if you are, but remember, they can afford a $335,000 home. A 2,000 square foot new build in the park can be expected to cost between $400,000 and $600,000 in construction costs alone. A 2,500 square foot home can be expected to cost anywhere from $625,000 to $1 million. This doesn't include the cost of site work, water, sewer, electric, etc. If our town board is truly interested in a plan to bring in young families to Lake Luzerne, might I suggest a development behind Town Hall with 2 to 3 bedroom townhomes or apartments with a biking and walking trail directly to the elementary school? This might actually have a shot of increasing the census at HLCS, which currently has 44 kids in the kindergarten class. That's about a 50% reduction in class size from a mere 40 years ago in the 80s when I graduated. Currently, about 50% of the Adirondack Park is second homes and rentals, not opposed to tourism or second homes. However, if there is no town plan to grow our year-round population, there will be no restaurants, pharmacy, market, gas station, liquor store, bank, or auto parts store. These places are not supported by weekenders and tourists alone. Please deny the request.
Thanks.
Thank you, ma'am. Our next speaker is Rod Johnson.
I'm Rod Johnson. I live at 63 Bay Road in the town of Lake Luzerne. And just to make my comments more legitimate, I've lived here 54 years so far. Hope to have a couple more. I want to thank the Adirondack Park Agency for hosting this public hearing, which brings a request for spot zoning into the light. Thomas Reed is getting a second bite at the apple with his proposal to change a portion of the Adirondack Park map. In 2021, Mr. Reed convinced several town board members to submit his proposal to the APA, which was reviewed and subsequently denied. Let there be no mistake, Mr. Reed wants his property rezoned in order to significantly increase the number of principal dwellings allowed. Reed's property is currently zoned for rural use, which he certainly must have known when he purchased it. Now, I apologize for some of the redundancy you're going to hear here, because I did my research before this presentation. And I'll give give these folks a lot of credit for trying to explain this very, very, very complex system in 30 minutes. So, rural use requires 8.5 acres per principal building. He asked for 56.5 acres to be rezoned to low intensity, which requires 3.2 acres per principal building. He also asked for 11.8 acres to be rezoned to moderate intensity, which requires 1.3 acres per principal building. Now, when I did my math, and it's probably wrong, this request would increase the number of principal buildings allowed from 7 to 26. That's just his area. Now, APA is saying the entire rural use area, 193 acres of it, has to be rezoned. Now, I want to address Mr. Reed's assertion that this rezoning would greatly enhance his ability to repopulate the town and the school. Reed already has a subdivision permit to accommodate three 2,500 square foot homes on Hidden Valley Road. A 1.5 acre lot is listed for $99,900. A 1.47 acre lot is listed for $119,900. No water, no septic, no electric, no town road. Now, if you know a builder, ask them what a 2,500 foot square home might cost. Amy did a pretty good job of explaining that in her message. It doesn't seem that a young working family with school-age children is the target buyer. It appears that the real market is big money from New York City, New Jersey, Long Island, and elsewhere. It appears that Mr. Reed could make a tidy profit on his investment selling lots within the current zoning designations. I guess there's never enough money. Damn the environment, damn the wildlife, damn the neighbors, and our precious planet. Now, I believe the APA recognizes spot zoning. The APA has guidelines for map amendments, which they explain very clearly. So I won't go into that any further, but their decision to make this apply to the whole rural use area impacts a heck of a lot of people who are very happy to be in the rural use area. Now,
sir, I'm going to have to ask you to please finish up.
Okay, I'm going to finish up. I got that much left.
Okay, sir. Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
I've been working on this for a long time. There's a in their paperwork, which you can research on your own. There's a thing called Hamlet 3, and they say that this amendment area is described as very low priority for residential expansion. So I respectfully ask the APA to deny with prejudice Mr. Reed's request for a map amendment. I don't believe he has met the burden of proof to justify any changes in land use area classification. And in case you don't know the legalese, with prejudice means he can't bring it again. He's already had second pass.
Thank you, sir. Our next speaker is Gina, it looks like Mintzer.
Yes.
All right, got that right.
So I'm one of the few who would actually support this amendment. So I'm a resident at 1275 Lake Avenue. This is my property is right across the street from Northwoods. All of the neighbors who live on Howe Road, when your people miss Howe Road or Northwoods, they scream through my property, hence all of the boulders that are up in front of it, or they park there to get their cell service or that sort of thing. But for those of you who live here year-round, like me, the issue is deeply personal. This has long been a welcoming, hardworking Adirondack town, but we are facing undeniable challenges.
you know, you talked about you bought your property, but you don't live here all the time. You're in Westchester. Our average age is now 50 with a shrinking number of young families. Yeah, because the ones who are coming, they can't find a house here, so they're now going to Corinth. So they're in Saratoga County, and that does not affect our tax base. You know, they're in Saratoga County. Our school population has dropped by half over the last 25 years. Many of our homes are seasonal or used as short-term rentals, leaving few options for local employees, seniors, or new residents who want to call this place home. As both a resident and a community leader, I have seen how these trends affect our businesses, our workforce, and our schools firsthand. Local employers can't fill open positions because employees can't find housing nearby. Our local shops and restaurants struggle to remain open year-round. Our volunteers, teachers, and emergency responders grow fewer each year because we have less year-round residents. The amendment represents a meaningful step toward a balanced solution, allowing for carefully planned residential growth while maintaining the natural beauty and integrity of the Adirondacks. It supports the state's call for expanded housing and gives communities like Lake Luzerne a fighting chance to thrive for generations to come. I urge the agency to approve this amendment and in doing so demonstrate that the Adirondack Park can remain not only a natural treasure, but also a living, sustainable home for the people who love and protect it. Thank you for your thoughtful review and for your continued dedication to the Adirondack communities you serve.
Thank you, ma'am.
Okay, our last speaker who signed up to speak today is Joan Linton. Joan?
Hi, I'm Joan Lentini. I am lucky to live on 360 acres of Adirondack beauty, and if it ever changed, I would just be so upset. I came to this area via Long Island, via via Saratoga Springs, which when I was in Saratoga Springs raising my children, it was a wonderful town to raise your kids. It was quiet, it was fun, it had a beautiful town until Progress came. And once you open the door to Progress, unless you manage it correctly, you're going to see Saratoga Springs in Lake Luzerne. I know people who were born and raised in Saratoga Springs who cannot afford to live there anymore because of the progress that has taken place there. And it would just break my heart to see that happen here. This is a beautiful community. We live here because it's rural. We live here because it's beautiful, and we have access to so many mountain streams, hiking trails. It's just so gorgeous here. To see it change would be really heartbreaking for me. Thank you.
I'm sorry, I didn't miss one person. Mary Ellen Allison, please. Sorry about that.
Okay. Thank you. I have to read from my phone.
Before I read my statement that I sent to the APA, I just wanted to point out a couple of things. Mr. Reed has a website called Snow Green Valley, and on that website, he constantly refers to Lake Vinar as the hamlet of Lake Vinar. Lake Vinar is not recognized as a hamlet by the APA. I think that Lake Vinar is our neighborhood. That's what it seems to me, because through this process, and this is something I'm thankful to Mr. Reed for, I've met some very nice people over the past 5 years while this has been going on. That said, my husband and I object to this project. Mr. Reed is a developer from Clifton Park, and as such, he was fully aware of the zoning and land classifications that when he purchased this property. His proposal does not take into consideration his neighbors or the environment. His proposal could drastically strain and change our neighborhood. We do not believe that one person should be able to affect such a change for personal gain. While Mr. Reed purports to want to address the housing needs of the town, many people have already stated why this would not affect the way we want it. We want to affect workforce housing, young families, and possibly senior housing for downsizing to open up some big homes in our town. I've addressed that concern with our board members over the past 4 years, but they're still working on it. So On his website, Mr. Reed extols the beauty of our quaint, neighborly little town, yet this proposal seeks to destroy that very character. The potential increase in population and or related businesses, which is a very important caveat to look at when you look at the descriptions of the land classifications. That change could equate to the following issues: an increase in traffic on Hidden Valley Road and Hall Hill Road, both of which are county roads or country roads with no shoulders or sidewalks. And that I saw some of the people from the APA when I was walking my dog today, and there are no sidewalks. You have to step out of the road, and if you don't, there could be an increased noise pollution due to the construction projects and potential related businesses and industries, an increase in light pollution from the streetlights and or personal dwelling or business security lighting. The concern of light pollution is an ongoing issue in the Adirondack Park, as is indicated in the Dark Skies Act of 2014. This proposed map amendment also ignores the lack of infrastructure to support the potential amount of development that it would allow. The Lake Vinar neighborhood does not have a sewer system, and such a large increase in individual septic systems could affect streams and lakes. There is no town water in our neighborhood, and a large increase in newly drilled wells could impact those of us with established wells. The scope of the potential development that it could be proposed would strain the resources of our fire and safety services as well. The local and state land zoning and classifications protect Lake Luzerne from the impact of such excess and should stay as they are. My husband and I personally object to this. Okay, this is my wrap up. We personally object to this proposal, which will affect our property without us ever being asked. Like Mr. Reed, we purchased our property knowing the land zoning and classification. Unlike Mr. Reed, we choose to live here because of the natural beauty, not because we want to destroy it or exploit it for profit. One person's greed should not be able to affect such a drastic change to the neighborhood of Lake Vinar. We implore the Adirondack Park Agency to protect our home. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, we have one more person signed up. Mr. Reed, would you like to make a comment? Yeah, one more? Yeah, yep. We have one more person who signed up. I'm sorry, Roberta Vanderson?
Vanderzee.
Vanderzee.
I don't know if I need that. I'm pretty loud. my name is Roberta Vanderzee. I live on Hall Hill. My property directly connects to the property, the B in question. I have an extended response that I will send to you before the 17th. But to respect the time today, I know we have, I wanted to focus on just a few things. On page 13 of the full environmental assessment form, part one, question H on page 13 is unanswered. I believe it's answered in the full write-up. But I want to remind you that at a minimum, there's a state campground whose property extends to the north side of 9N to Hall Hill and across from and past Hall Hill a short ways. There's also the Harris Preserve with the trail that goes up Potash Mountain. There is a nature trail that branches off to the right off the main summit trail. On that nature trail, there is an outlook where you can see the roofs of Painted Pony to the right and all the way to Beach Mountain on the left. The path of that view is directly over this, the bigger piece of the property. I very regularly see wildlife making a daily route from or back into that property. It includes, and I've seen this or caught it on the trail cam that faces out there, deer, turkeys, a bear or two, bobcat, coyotes, fisher cats, red-tailed hawks, broad-winged hawks, and barred owls, pileated woodpeckers, and hummingbirds. They all come in, and then they turn around the birds and fly right back in there, so I assume they're nesting back there somewhere. The applicant's short environmental assessment form, part one, under brief description, stated it's consistent with the objectives of the town comprehensive plan. The comprehensive plan does not indicate a need for upscale housing, and your pricing analysis was exactly the numbers I came up with. That was amazing. The plan lists needs for funding from community development block grants or housing rehabilitation grants and pairing these with Affordable Housing Corporation. These are for lower income renovations and development. I'll skip over the calculations because you already went through that. Being that most of the land is surrounded by rural use land, changing the classification would make it severely inconsistent with the local character, and I too ask that this application be denied with prejudice. Twice is enough.
Thank you, ma'am. Mr. Reed, would you like to make a public comment? There you go, sir.
Okay. Can I use the slideshow?
No, sir.
All right. It would help. All right. So the main thing I wanted to talk about, really.
Who are you?
My name is Brent Reed. So my parents are the ones that own the property. I was a representative on the application. So I did all the GIS work. I know the maps. And like, I just wanted to explain a couple things tonight about what people are saying, because a lot of it's not accurate. What we originally asked for, which I think it was you, you almost had it, it goes from 7 up to about 23 was the original ask. So it went up, but it wasn't as big as what's currently in play. So this isn't what we originally asked for. I just wanted to straighten that out, because it wasn't obvious to some of the articles and things like that. The other thing, comprehensive plan was brought up. This is how we were trying to attach it to comprehensive plan, because really we were just trying to find data that supported what we were asking for. So the comprehensive plan does call Lake Vinara a secondary hamlet. If you look in the 2010 comprehensive plan, it says that. I'm not making it up, it says it in the plan. And hamlet areas are like the areas that you're supposed to, in theory, build more in. So it says it in the comprehensive plan, that's why we brought it up. Reason we brought up Hamlets 3 is, there's a map in Hamlets 3, and I tried verifying this with people from the APA, that draws hamlet rings in different areas. Lake Vinara was one of the areas that looked like the areas that had those hamlet rings. And somebody said that a rural area, I don't know your exact words, I think it was you, is not one of the areas that you're supposed to necessarily build a lot in. But our whole thing with Hamlets 3, that was you, right? Was that what it also says in there is for map amendment areas, you're supposed to do the best places for map amendments are at rings 1 and 2 of a hamlet area. And this area is in rings 1 and 2 of the hamlet areas that are drawn in Hamlets 3, is the best I could tell. So that's why we were referring to these things. You don't have to agree
what
with
I
me.
What I said is a direct quote. It's a direct quote.
Please, sir.
It's a direct quote from Hamlets 3, yeah. Right, but that's what it is now. We are saying that based on the soils and the slopes and things, it should be looked as being changed. And again, it was in a very small area. And if you look around, our change would have made it about, I don't know, 4 acres per house. Look across the street on Hidden Valley Road. How big are those lots? Maybe an acre, if you're lucky. Look along 9N, the ones that are residential resort or residential resort, which is how it's zoned. That's another thing. Everybody's saying we're trying to change the zoning. That parcel of Mr. Reed's and Mrs. Reed's is residential resort, one house per acre. So that means on those 96 acres that they have, that allows for approximately 55 houses in the town zoning. So we were looking for like half of that. So when you say it's just some greedy person, that's not what it is. You don't have to agree with it. Like, there were two people in there that were like, we just don't want more houses in Lake Luzerne. And I can accept that. But don't make up stuff that's not true. Because that's why I'm here. That's what I'm talking about. So that's all I wanted to say. Like,
can I ask a question?
I can take a question. I don't care.
I don't understand, though, if you knew that you could not develop the property based on the current mapping of the Adirondack Park Association.
Okay.
Why did you buy it? If you knew.
This doesn't win, it's not the end of the world.
Oh, so.
But map amendments are a thing. They're
so
a thing.
On.
It's a legal. No, no.
Move on from this.
No, you move on. You don't even live here. My parents have been here for 40 years. What do you pick flowers in a parking lot somewhere across the street?
No.
Like I said.
So I am going to live here.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Yes, ma'am. One more comment. We'll take one more comment. We thank you for your patience.
Sorry.
Thank you.
Ed Lando speaking. I don't need that.
Can you say your name? Can you say your name?
Yes.
And just use this, please.
My name is Denise Williams. I'm actually a Hadley resident. I'm here because the property I manage borders the Luzerne Lake George line, 400 acres, Hidden Lake Camp of the Girl Scouts. My fear is once this is done, it's a precedent.
Exactly.
Which then becomes all those other properties out there in between. If Hutopia wanted to do this, where does that roll in there? So our objection and sound objection is based on the precedent it was set. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, we thank you for your comments. We're going to continue to accept comments until November 17th. We recommend that you please submit those comments to us. And at this point, we're going to close the hearing. And, sir, if you want to have a question, I can.
Representative from APA here.
Yeah, we're all here. We'll be here. We're just APA people here. We'll be hanging out for a little bit. Okay, so, yeah. Myself and Matt here. And, yes, sir. I'm APA. Yep. Thank you, everybody.
That was just that was